for the position of chairperson.
Due to the absence of any other proposal, I request Mr. Khadebe to take the chair and before we start until the chairperson returns. Thanks. Honourable members, can we commence with our meeting, please? First of all, I'd like to welcome each and everyone in this fourth quarter of Parliament. I know that we are coming from a hectic constituency whereby we never rested, and then when we're about to rest again, we have to be called back to duty, so that we can execute the mandate which the people have given us. So I'd like to welcome each and every member and wish that everyone will be in good health until the end of the session, because we're going to need each and everyone until the end, because this session, you remember very well, that is when that we are going to deal with the budget policy statement. Also, what is really critical is the issue of dealing with BRRR, BRRR, of which as a committee, I think that we have to apply our mind very well and see which entities within the family of DTI are struggling and see where we can help them, and those who are not working, see what money we can take from them and give those who are working. I think that's the critical aspect of this of this fourth quarter. I think that that constitutional mandate which was given by the people of the Republic, we must exercise it now, so that the people are not going to warm their chairs wherever they are. Instead, they must be on the field, transforming the country and ensuring a better life for all. So, honourable members, we are having Apollo this year. On our side, we are having an apology from the chairperson and Mr. Ambers and Mayor Sufanel Merve. And then those apologies have been accepted. There's no other apology which I know of. So what is critical here today is that we have to adopt this agenda. From what we're having is that we're having two entities which are going to present their annual statements today, which is the South African Bureau of Standards and also the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. These entities are very critical, in particular when taking into consideration that we have adopted the Industrial Policy Action Plan. And number two, what is also critical is that part of creating the jobs within the country, we have to export our goods to the outside world. So what is very important in the process then is that the goods which we are going to export, they must be of high quality. They must be of high quality and be reliable, so that when the manufacturer of a particular good sees that this good is doing 1, 2, 3, 4, it's got a warranty of 2 years. Really, it must be able to withstand that. So these entities, usually we don't call them as the portfolio committees, but I'm very happy that at long last, the sanity prevailed within the committee that we need these bodies to come here so that we can see how they are doing their work and where they can be supported and where necessary, where they can be reprimanded if they're not doing things properly. Because, as I said, we are here to execute the mandate which is given by the people. And our people have no other lobby group except the Parliament of the Republic. They can only lobby with their vote. So what is critical here is that we must respect that. So, honourable members, here is the agenda before us. The first item is the issue of the briefing by South African Bureau of Standards, and number two, the national regulator. Can we adopt this agenda? Honourable Jack. Any seconder for that? All right, thank you, Honourable Komalo. So the agenda is adopted as is. So, honourable members, we are here today, as I said, that we are having two entities. The first entity which is going to give us the report is the South African Bureau of Standards. So they are led by Dr. Boni Mehlomakulu as the CEO of the board. Of the Bureau of Standards. And then I'll request her to introduce her delegation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Honorable Members, the colleagues from the DTR, our colleagues from the NRCF, and the colleagues from the SABS. I just want to, before I introduce the team, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to, on behalf of my chairman, just apologize that he's not able to join us, Mr. Makhetsibisi, and send his apologies. He was keen to present on behalf of SABS today, but he had a long-standing commitment, and he sent his apologies to the minister, and he asked me to convey those apologies today. With me today, I have the excellent CFO, Ms. Alice Lefteris. She will be talking to the financial statement today, and Mr. Bright Amisi, who is our group manager for financial accounting, and he acted for about a year in the standards development area, so he quite understands the institution, and he will be engaging on questions that members of the committee might have as well. Chase, I can then continue with the presentation and look at the outline of the presentation. I'll be talking to the legislative framework, the strategic plan objectives. I'll look at the highlights and talk a little bit about the performance scores against what we had targeted. And the CFO will talk to the income statement and statements of financial position of the organization, and then I'll take over from here to talk about what we're busy with and conclude. I guess we all are aware of the history of SABS, established by the Act of Parliament in 1945, and today SABS is 66 years old and continues to operate today under the Standards Act of 2008. The Act is very clear on the roles of the SABS, and you know, people from industry and stakeholders have come back and said there's a large duplication between the mandate of the SABS and the mandate of the NRCS, and there are issues of grey areas there, but on our side, the mandate is very clear. We develop, promote, and maintain South African standards, and we promote quality in connection with commodities, products, and services, and we render conformity assessment services and matters connected herewith, and that's what then drives what we do every day. In terms of the PFMA, the SABS is scheduled as a 3B entity, and we make about 77% of our total budget from external revenue, and about 23% comes from the government grant. I think it's important at this meeting, given that as the Honourable Chair has mentioned, we haven't had an opportunity in the past to come and present But if I talk a little bit about the rich history of this organization that we represent today, we know that the standards activities in South Africa date back from the early 1990s, and SABS was formally established in 1945. And we also know that internationally, SABS played a big role in the establishment of what we call today the International Standardization Organization, ISO. Famous for the ISO 14000, the ISO 9000 that we talk about all the time. Most organizations are certified against that standard. SABS holds some intellectual property in ISO 9000 and ISO 14000 because we were party in that development. Most people don't quite, sometimes that includes SABS people themselves, we don't appreciate the strength of the network that affiliation with ISO brings to South Africa, because we have a connection with every standard body in the world through this ISO network. And as an organization, we're then supposed to leverage that connection to assist the country with the goods that need to be exported, that needs to get to certain destinations using that network. But it's not optimally used, and ISO themselves acknowledge that they haven't been able to assist various standards bodies to utilize this mechanism to derive value for their country. So it's something they're looking at themselves. Originally, the SABS was responsible for the development of national standards, testing, certification, regulatory function was with the SABS training, and the design institute was also with the SABS. And over time, that changed. And just to elaborate on the changes over time, Chair, if you allow me, and I'll segment it in chunks of time. From 1945 to 1990s, the late 80s, SABS and other technical institutions of government, including the CSIR, what we call NEFSA today, were supported, I would say handsomely, by government for them to do their technical work. And the support was throughout the value chain, whether the activities were for the commercial benefit of industry or were for the social economic benefit of the country. And the capabilities within the organization were fully supported and enhanced by the state. So the focus was not on revenue generation, or you have to have your own revenue and government will restrict the support to this level. And standards development was really used to support the economy. And post that period, around 1990, we then saw a more open economy in South Africa, and foreign competition was welcome. And there was a bigger drive from our government to drive competitiveness of local business, and the focus was on the efficient use of state funds, and there was talk of commercialization of state enterprises, and we would remember the talk around Eskom and their generation capacity, and the talk that more private companies should be allowed to generate, to contribute to the generation. So all of those engagements resulted in a lower investment going to the public entity. But what happened with the open economy is that and the limited investment in the capacity of these organizations is that we started to lose expertise. And expertise moved to other parts of the world or to private businesses. And the technology cohesion that we had as a country was lost. And the example I usually use is that CSIR had a laboratory that was supporting Sasol's fuel development. The whole diversification of product streams from Sasol was totally supported by the CSIR lab, which was shut down in 1995. So the technology cohesion in the country was lost. SABS was developing standards to support the Sasol, support Eskom, supported Transnet in their activities, and that cohesion as institutions started to stand alone and fight for survival through external revenue, we lost the technology cohesion as a country. And I think it's an important point to remember as we talk about where the organization is today. Around 2002, there was a call for SABS standards to become SAN standards. We talk about SANS instead of SABS standards, and that was to ensure that we have openness around the issue of standards. They are not SABS owned. We developing standards on behalf of the country, and there was a call for that to be amended, and so SABS standards changed to SANS standards. And competition in conformity assessment, what is in the act for SABS, that competition was open and encouraged, and that had an effect in that we started to lose expertise at SABS to that competition, and the investment to the equipment was not encouraged because we had alternatives as a country where this test could be done. And over 10, 15 years, the effect of that is that today we don't quite have that capacity, both in instrumentation and in people. But that came because there was competition and the country had options. They could go to SGS, they could go to test lab, and those labs today manned by former SABS experts that are doing that work for commercial gain. In 2008, there was a regulatory process that was driven by our government, and that was to take the regulatory function outside of the SABS, and I must state that internationally and in terms of our association with ISO, that is seen as best practice. So we were following best practice trend in that you remove the conflict from an organization like SABS having a watchdog responsibility and a friend of industry responsibility. And with that removed, it then meant that SABS needed to refocus and emphasize different things. Another important development globally that I need to talk to before I go to the strategic objectives of SABS is the technology flow of goods. Back in the 70s, in the 60s, South Africa was among the countries that were producing papers, scientific papers, that were producing innovative products, and that over the last 30 years has changed. We've had the emergence of Asia, and their technologies coming to the forefront, and that has meant that there is a different flow of goods that come to South Africa. And the quality of those goods is what then, as SABS, we get to engage with. But the reality is that the international flow of goods demands that the institutions that are supposed to check that quality should be enhanced, because the quality of goods that come into various countries from a certain section of the world have become more questionable. And so you need institutional capacity within the country to really assure the country that it's the right goods that end up in the country. And the problems that we're having with the goods that come into the country have everything to do with these changes in the technology powers of the world, and people using those powers of technology to really dump products that are not of good quality to the countries that are seen to be weaker in managing their own quality systems. Continuing with the presentation then, honorable members, the strategic objectives that we put forward for ourselves in the period that we're reviewing were to gain a trust in our value-added standardization and conformity assessment services by equivalent peer organizations and by both domestic and foreign markets. You want, as an organization, to be able to test once and have that product trusted and accepted everywhere. It shouldn't be tested again somewhere else. And broader participation in and access to national standards, processes, and services. One of the issues we deal with mostly is the issue of SMEs and consumers not being able to partake in the standards development process or even accessing the right standards or using those standards to improve their businesses. And it's an issue that we've put as a strategic objective for us as an organization, because that means that if SMEs are not able to partake in the standards formulation process, they could be eliminated in the process further down the value chain because the standard will not cater to the product that they deserve. It usually is very expensive for SMEs to partake in that process. They have to leave their work and come to SABS and spend time negotiating with other industry players on a standard. And some of them just can't afford the time. And so the reality is that they will not be able to attend. And we develop standards in one location, which is our Pretoria head offices. So what we've started to do is to work on a video conferencing facility that is going to allow people in Cape Town not to need to get on a plane to go to Pretoria to partake in the process. They can link up from our office here in Rosebank and engage with the process and really put their point across about what they want included in the standard. And the third one is the standard that supports industrial policy action plan. We've identified, working with our colleagues at the DTI, the important sectors out of the IPEP, and we're working with the DTI to fast-track those standards and ensure that we're able to support the government delivery against that plan. The history that I gave around SABS and the support in the past and the support that we have now is that the organization needs to grow its revenue. And growing the revenue will allow us as an organization to be able to reinvest in technology. Where we are at the moment, the DTI gets a lot of complaints from various bodies, industry bodies, complaining about the SABS partially testing on this and not being able to test this product, tires and all. It's because the investment in equipment is expensive. And if we don't make enough revenue as an organization to support reinvestment in equipment and upgrading equipment and just keeping up with the technology development that require new testing, we have to go back to government and request for money, and that's not sustainable. And usually, there are many competing needs for the resources that our government has. And then we have to focus on the pool of competent staff for the SABS to support the needs of industry. And the history I've given, we've actually suffered as an organization in terms of the loss of key expertise. And we needed a totally different game plan in order for us to source the expertise that supports the growth in our services. Some of the highlights talk to the journey that we walked. It was a year long journey to do a baseline analysis, engage our stakeholders, industry, and consumers about where do they want SABS to be. And most people talk about the SABS that they know from 1970 or 1980, and they ask what happened to that SABS. It used to work. And obviously the context and the circumstances have changed, so they're not going to get the actual SABS that they had in 1970 or 1980. But the SABS that we should have in the 2000s, in the 2000s, 2011, it should have the same capabilities to be able to meet in it. With the whole change that I've spoken about, the core capabilities should remain the same and service the country. So we worked on a five-year strategy to take the organization back to that level of capabilities and trust with industry and government and consumers. And the strategy was approved by our board, and we worked on a corporate plan and business plan that talked to that strategy. And the early fruits include early fruits of the implementation of that strategy include the management capabilities and technical capabilities that we've been able to bring back to the organization to address the gaps that we have. Other highlights include the establishment of the SABS Academy. We did do training internally and externally, but we then consolidated that into an SABS Academy, and we want to be able to track our development of in-house capacity to ensure that we're able to meet the needs of the strategy that we've put in place. And we developed a methodology that looks at socioeconomic impact of standards And the reason for that is for a while SABS has been targeting a number of standards. And when we have achieved that number, we then didn't go back to look at how many of those standards are actually being used. So we were assessed on reaching 700, 800 standards. You'll see on the annual report that the numbers were high around 2000, 2008, 2007, and we brought the numbers down because we're looking for impact. If we're going to develop a high number of standards and they sit and collect dust, then we've wasted taxpayers' money. We need to work on standards that will have impact in the economy. Whether that impact is safety, health, and performance in industry, that is impact in the economy. So that we've shifted the focus a little bit there. We've implemented an enterprise project management office. We have a number of improvement projects out of the strategy that we'll be busy with as an organization, and we have a delivery mechanism that we've put in place to address that. And the biggest complaint that when I took over as the CEO that I had to face was that we were very poor in customer services as an organization. Because we had a regulator with us, we were seen as being very arrogant. We were seen as not being responsive to industry, that they needed to test with us in order for them to comply with something. And so we didn't have a culture of servicing a customer, because the customer needed us more than we needed the customer. And that has changed with the change of the legislation. And it's going to take a number of years to change that culture in the organization to say, we are a service organization. We're not an SABS that is a regulator that people have to run to comply. We are a service organization. And it's a total change of focus for the organization that a number of people that have been with the organization for a while are struggling with. And they still say, well, if he wants certification, he must come to us. No, we have to go to that person and say, you know, this is how we can help you with your business. And we mustn't wait for SMEs or people to come to us. And that really is the new approach that we're putting in place. Also, the second comment or complaint that I had to face and I still face today is this is slow turnaround time. And the biggest culprit in that space was solar water heaters. And a lot of people just, you know, not being able to get to the Eskom rebate program because the system was still being tested by SABS, and Eskom as a prerequisite had indicated that it has to be SABS approved. And so, you know, with that culture that you need us because you need to get to the Eskom tender, we're going to take our time. And we needed to really address that. So we got funding from the DTI, additional funding from the DTI for us to increase our capacity for testing in that particular area, but also we then engaged with our board to put a laboratory and a management system that will allow a customer, when they come in and they bring their sample, that should be recorded. They should get an SMS that we've received it. They should get feedback immediately that says it's going to take, depending on what product it is, biological products, it's going to take a day. Engineering products like solar water heaters, it's going to take 3 weeks, and that's just inherent in the testing process. And maybe a stove is going to take a week, but they should have that feedback the day they bring the sample. And at the moment, that's not happening. And that's, you know, those are, you know, some of the just modernization activities that need to happen with the organization. And there's an outcry in industry and stakeholders for turnaround times within SABS to change and be more reliable. And talking to some of the performance indicators against targets, the standards were lower than we had indicated in our target, and really that talked to the focus that had shifted a little bit, where we were starting to look at more relevance than the number. And the alignment of standards with international standards, the target was exceeded, but even that, for us as management, we see as a weak target, because we shouldn't be going after alignment for the sake of alignment. We should align where industry in South Africa can benefit from that alignment. If we adopt a standard and there's no product in South Africa that talks to that standard, we reach our target, but it means nothing to the South African economy. So we're really starting to engage with the impact of every target that we put in place. Sales of standards were lower. We've been, for, I would say, 2 years now, been working on a web tool, and the decision, because of financial constraints, was made to develop an in-house tool, and it hasn't worked optimally. We've had to abandon that and work with ISO, our international partner, to adopt their tool and use the tested known solution for that. And then the CFO will talk to the numbers. Can I hand over to you?
From the income statement, we generated commercial revenue, which is our external revenue, of 394 odd million. 50% of that revenue is made from testing services, and the remainder is about 45% from certification services, and the balance from the sale of standards. As mentioned, we received a government grant of 156 million. There is a little bit of other revenue which we generate there in terms of profit from exchange gains, some rentals that we receive on the properties. Our expenditure was well contained during the year, 529 million, just a 2% increase on last year. There were a lot of initiatives there to contain expenses. We insourced repairs and maintenance, which gave us a significant saving. Any vacancies in terms of employees had to be justified to ensure that expense is warranted. And that resulted in a profit for the year of 54 million, which is about a 10% profit return. If we look at the statements of financial position, just some highlights there. Our property, plant and equipment increased significantly with the work in progress on our new laboratories. We've capitalized about 105 million in 2011. The building will be completed during the 11-12 year, and that will increase property, plant and equipment. In terms of our intangibles, and that's really software, we revised the useful lives of our ICT infrastructure, and that caused a decline in that number. Available for sale investments, a significant increase there. We received from the shareholders some funding during the 10-11 year of $1 million. Some of that has been invested in medium-term investments, and the rest is sitting in cash. And that would be the increase shown in cash there as well, is some of the funding from the shareholder. Our borrowings, as you can see, are very low. We do not run overdrafts. We have about a 15 million rand loan, which will be paid now during November, and that will then take away all external borrowings. In other liabilities, we've recorded the grant from government, which we record as deferred income, and then we amortize it as those capital expenditure comes into play.
Okay, the targets then, as it refers to the numbers, the laboratory tests and investigations, performance was lower than targeted, and really that's on your presentation, there's something that says new labs, it's old labs, that had conditions and equipment that was failing, and in that space we also deal with a lot of industry complaints when they try and bring the product to the FABS for testing to find that equipment is not working, and it takes months to repair the equipment, and in that process an entrepreneur loses a business opportunity and they have to close down and retrench people. You know, and when you're facing that entrepreneur and they're complaining and they're telling you about how many people they had to let go of because FABS couldn't test on time, It brings the issue home about the importance of this infrastructure and products and systems. That's an area that is growing at SABS, there is a, you know, a little bit of discrepancy because of the internal trading in that area, but we exceeded a target on product and system certification. And labs that are accredited, and accreditation is very important because I can, after working for SABS for some years, I can decide to go open my own lab in my garage and conduct the work, but I'm not to be trusted because I'm not accredited by a third party that's going to say you have the capacity and the know-how to do this work. And we pay a lot of emphasis on getting the right accreditation so that the industry that works with us can have the confidence that when we say we are a certification body, somebody has said we have the capacity, the know-how, and the tools to do that. Number of certification schemes. We were planning to develop more certification schemes to deal with the demand, and we couldn't quite get to that target of accreditation. We got to the target of developing new certification schemes, but to get them accredited so that industry could trust them, that part of the goal was not reached, but the schemes were developed, but they haven't been accredited by SANA. Number of test reports, the number was lower, and again, that's the demand of services, and the fact that, you know, for some laboratories which we couldn't test and we couldn't issue the report. Before I go to the things we are busy with, I just want to, you know, talk about some lowlights that are, you know, are close to my heart, and that, you know, the issue that we face with, you know, industry complaints and, you know, just the dismay in industry when we our equipment or even our people cannot perform, resulting in lower testing revenue that we see. Equipment failing and the conditions not being able, it's not being met in the laboratories. And in our mining and minerals business, we lost about half of our revenue, which Bright amounts to about 60 million rand compounded over time. And that meant that if you don't have a contract, you can't keep the people. We had to retrench a number of people. And that was a very difficult situation for us, because you have to face people and tell them that actually we've lost this contract to that new player that is not even local. You know, it's people lobbying various mining companies, and the mining companies then don't give the work to the SABS, they give it to this company that then comes and recruits all the staff staff from SABS and goes, does the work, pays them half, maybe half what we pay them, and when they lose the contract, those people are unemployed. And it's just an issue of sustainability in our economy that says we have institutions of government that are mandated by the law to do this work, and yet, you know, industry and even other government departments, they go out and they do work with other institutions, and the impact of that is that we lose the capacity within the economy to do the work sustainably. It's not a revenue issue for SABS, and I always say that the impact 5-10 years down the line is that we lose that core capacity to be able to assist our industry to grow. And the last one is that we had promised that we were going to work on the strategy for design, and we see design as very important to this country. It is a key building block to allow the innovation engine to work in the country, and over the last 40 years of its existence, it hasn't really gotten a strategy that is supported by cabinet, that is supported by National Treasury in funding and other. So we were planning to work on that strategy, but we then focused our attention on the core business of SABS, and we have started working on that strategy, and we should be finished by December with that strategy and be able to present it to the board and the DTI. And, you know, with every year that we don't finalize this, you know, we see an impact, you know, 3 years down the line with the manufacturing capacity in the country not really getting the momentum it's supposed to get. what we're busy with is, you know, our building is complete. We're launching the new laboratory complex on the 20th of this month. And we've engaged our board to release some of the savings for CAPEX for us to invest in new equipment. We just didn't feel it was appropriate for us to go back to the DTI after they had been really generous with their time in helping us put a strong argument to National Treasury to get funding for the new laboratory, which we are really grateful for. It is a lifeline for SABS, and that needs to be complemented by the right equipment and the right skills, and we're working on that. And we've improved our engagement with industry bodies, and that's where we get the feedback of whether the industry, various industry sectors are happy or unhappy and where the specific problems are to allow us to react to that. And the role of the SABS Mark, and obviously our colleagues from the NRCS will present, the industry is struggling with the levies and SABS Mark situation, and we engage with the industry on the SABS Mark, and they come back to us, and we don't know if they go back to the NRCS and say something different, but when they come back to us, they come back and say they want the SABS Mark. It gave them the assurance, and they want us to be able to argue for the SABS Mark to continue in South Africa to give that assurance. You see it in bulk water, you see it in other instruments. And with the Consumer Protection Act, we all in that value chain then take the responsibility once we stamp that mark, because we're saying we trust this, we've tested this product fully. And the challenge with the equipment that we have is that what you end up having are people making a plan and partially testing and putting a mark against that. And it's a challenge that with my colleague from the NRCS we've engaged on, and we've said it's unacceptable to put to attach a mark on a partially tested good. So we, out of that investment that we got from our board, we're focusing on the areas where we need to put an SABS mark. In conclusion, honourable members, we believe that given the challenges that we're facing as an organisation, we've performed well financially. And you know, it wasn't a windfall; it was just mostly, you know, hard work and facing the challenges head on. And really, I often say, as I stand and talk to people, I stand on the shoulders of 1,000 and, you know, odd SABS employees that work very hard, the challenge of adapting to new environments, a new vision, people telling you what you've been doing is not right, let's do it like that, and just those people putting an effort to ensure that they're able to support it and keep SABS ticking along, and they are all responsible for the good financial results. Maintenance of clean audit, and we made a higher profit than we had expected out of the savings that we made as an organization with you know, tighter control on the expenditure on imports to the business. And we are excited with our strategic direction. We've engaged industry to great lengths about what they needed from SABS, and we've put that down in a 5-year strategy document, and we're hoping that with that we can then as an organization get the SABS where it should be. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Dr. Nosho Makulu. Honorable members, I'd also like to welcome Honorable Libenya for waltzing in this meeting. Really, your presence is highly appreciated. We know that we had a hectic constituency period, so that everyone is able to come, it actually shows a high level of commitment to this institution. Honorable members, I think that we are dealing with a very crucial institution here. I remember that when you look at my home state at home, Honorable Twabasa, you know, the window frames for that house was built around the 1950s. The window frames are still intact. The door frames are still intact. But you go to the RTP houses today, which are hardly 10 years, some are hardly 2 years, to get up on. The door frames are no longer straight. The window frames are no longer straight. it shows that that stamp, which was always there, SABS, really it meant that there was quality assured. And then we know very well that with these high levels of poverty, you know, when our people invest in a property like a house, it's a lifetime investment. So if they have to go and redo it within a period of 10 years, it means that we're not dealing with poverty. We're actually exacerbating it. And then what I also appreciate with this presentation is the honesty coming from the SABS itself, that its customer care was a little bit lax, that they didn't take their customers seriously. I think that when the people acknowledge their mistake, is then that they are going to be able to address that problem. Because we know very well that as a government, we always emphasize that people come first. And then what is critical here, they are dealing with the businesses which are supposed to be providing jobs, which we are trying to create. We know that by 2020, we want at least an additional 5 million jobs. So I think that they must be commended for trying to address that. But I think that as we are moving forward, we must give them certain marching orders to ensure that what they are saying, they must walk the talk. I think that's the critical aspect. They must walk the talk. So, honorable members, this is a meeting. I think that, as we said a long time ago, that we are going to invite these entities so that they come and share their success with us, even their frustrations. And we also share our experiences we have with our constituencies. So this call is in our court. Honorable Kozi, will you be the first one? Honorable Kozi, all right, let me show the head. Let me see, yes. Honorable Kozi, Honorable Gawasa, Honorable Smane, and Honorable Jack. I honorable series. Why do I like you so much, eh?
All right. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the CEO perhaps I should first thank the report that he's given to the committee. I think he has really given a report that gives a really bleak future. Perhaps in your own words, saying being honest does help, but it is actually a worrisome man. The other thing is that perhaps if before we have had interaction with SABS, we could have, as a committee, assisted or highlighted some of the areas of emphasis. The issue of competition that you have articulated here, in your own, really presents serious challenges that are taking place. Perhaps my question would be, do you see a role for SABS today? And what role particularly? The fact that you have mentioned that there are so many other SABS-like that have actually sprung up. I do also want to ask, in terms of the law, ultimately who gets recognition for those standards in our country? Because I think as legislators, even if there can be as many, are those ones guided by the law as well? Because it means then you'll have different standards in different organizations that are actually meaning that. Do we Is there legislation that gives SABS perhaps the ultimate power to actually decide? Because, as the chair said earlier, there is worrisome in the products that are being produced, either in South Africa or outside of South Africa. Especially those ones that are important in countries, you know, like the Asian countries, what we get in South Africa. Yes, they might be very reasonable, and that is what our people can afford. But the quality is what, as South Africans, we have lost every day. And perhaps if you look at even the bricks that are produced today, you know, everything that comes there is reasonable, but is actually the quality is very questionable. I see in your report you say the China office has been closed, and perhaps this was one of the ways you were trying to reach out so that whatever comes to South Africa, which is very important to us, what comes to South Africa is of the quality standard. It would be interesting to hear why was that office closed, you know, because if we don't chase those things in South Africa, firstly, things that are important do not create jobs in South Africa, number one. Secondly, they are not sustainable in terms of their own quality, and that is affecting us daily. Perhaps, besides that, we need to be concentrating as well, as I see here, there was interaction with Africa, because those are the areas perhaps, again, we can be very competitive in terms of us as South Africans. Perhaps what role are we playing in assisting the countries just next door to us in terms of quality and that? And yeah, those would be. I saw in your report that you do have a relationship with Consumer Commission, because it is a very active commission, and it will definitely need your support if they have to challenge a number of things as consumers complain and raise matters with them. You will have to check, I mean, with that. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Honorable Kosi. I think that the two questions will have to apply. Please, when we go to the next legislator, Kwabasa or Kwabasa, sometimes known as Kwabasa, sometimes known as Kwabasa, he'll explain himself. But can we have the two question rule so that we can give other people a chance and then try to manage the time?
No, the Kwabasa, we can sort it out. No, the first one is not a question. I just seek clarity on, you mentioned there was some time when you considered being called sons, I suppose, South African national standards, and against the subs that we have known. Just a clarity on that. Because I also noticed you use that word as well in your document. The question that I would like to ask is the relationship between yourselves and Customs and Excise, just so that you are able to strengthen your capacity to deal with substandard goods that come into the country. The second one, Chair, is your capacity to check unscrupulous businesses who would use your mark, your SAPS mark, in an attempt to say to the customer, this is SAPS approved when it is not so. I raise this question because I am aware that somewhere in Durban, there was a time when exercise books of very poor quality were produced, lead pencils of very poor quality were produced, and you would know that part of the lead in the lead pencil affects the eyes of the learner. And your mark was being used, and I'm not sure whether that still continues. What is your capacity in terms of checking just those people who might use your... I'll come back for one or two more. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kwabasa, for your two questions. Honorable Sman.
Thank you very much. I'll turn around for a second statement. Definitely for a
second round. Chairperson, I just... It clearly comes through that there's a clear lack towards the technology in order for SABS to go forward. I also want to understand, within your short-term projections going forward, in order to achieve your objection, Have you got some sort of interim arrangement through DTI with, let me call it the private sector or firms that has got their own labs up and going, where you haven't got the facilities or the technical expertise or the technical equipment in order for you, in order for them to use your brand or in order for them to go forward? Because that will definitely, the issue of Richards Bay, where 104 people lost their jobs in your report, and that was on page 61, because you couldn't apply a certificate. That's where I've got some sort of a problems with the economic that we want to see as a portfolio and as DTI want to go forward. And I want to see your proactiveness into there where your shortcomings is. I also want to understand a little bit more into your in products that are coming in, and especially on the role that DTI wants to take with IPAP 2 or IPAP and the quality thereof. And SAB is saying that items shouldn't be, or products shouldn't be tested twice. And how do we see then protecting our consumers, especially where outside products actually comes in back without some sort of a verification? And I would, maybe I misunderstood you, maybe we're just talking locally and not externally. And that's my two questions, and I'll wait for round two again. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. Harris?
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, congratulations to the department for a clean audit. The numbers look good. The Auditor General was clearly able to do his job properly. I have four questions. I'll ask two now and keep the other two. The first one is you receive around 150 million from the fiscus each year. I think it's about 25% of your revenue. I'm interested how that compares to international standards bodies. Do most countries fund to around 25% of revenue, or are they sometimes run as wholly unsupported entities? Is there an alternative model internationally that we should be looking at? And it's interesting that revenue leads to around 50 million rands profit. So the taxpayer is putting in around 156 million rand a year, and SAPS is coming out with 50 million rand profit. Then, Chair, I probably get as an MP most complaints from the public about the Consumer Commission. But number two, I'm afraid, is in this space. And most of them relate actually to the NRCS, which we'll get to shortly. But there's also a fair amount of confusion from manufacturers especially about whether they should be speaking to the Bureau of Standards or the NCRS. I mean, I often get emails where people have contacted both organizations, and there's some kind of to-ing and fro-ing, sometimes over a period of months, in terms of who must actually give them the approval they require. So I'm interested in the engagement between these two departments. And perhaps, you know, I sometimes think that the decision we took in 2008 to split the regulatory functions out into the NRCS might have actually confused South African manufacturers more than assisted them. So I'd like some assurance that there is a degree of coordination between the departments, and actually in terms of facing the clients, we're not creating more confusion than we're solving problems. I'll hold my next two questions.
Thank you, Honourable Lebele.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm not sure whether the question that I'm going to pose is under the SAPS scope of work, but the question that I would like to pose is regarding the China in which some of these big chain stores operate, you find that there is a big difference. If you go to ShopRite in Durban and you go to ShopRite in a rural town like Matatiel or Jozine or wherever, the standard levels are very much different. Is that within your scope of work, and what can be done regarding that? But we will always get, you know, that concern. I've experienced it myself, and you get a shock that this is the same store, but just because it is in a rural town, then the standard is dismally low. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. You guys can just answer all the questions as honestly as possible.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for your questions. I will invite my team and colleagues from the DGI to address some of the specific issues. But let me start with just the first one and comments from the Honourable Chair. You know, I personally believe that when you have to walk the talk, you have to put yourself out there in terms of what you want to achieve and what you're struggling with, what are the circumstances and what you want to achieve, and then put ambitious targets to turn the situation around. And put those out there, engage with your industry and say this is what you're going to have, LIMS and all the systems I spoke about. And every year we then get together on Standards Day, which is on the 14th, but we're meeting tomorrow, where we have a convention. And in that convention I then give a report in terms of how we've addressed the challenges that we've gotten from industry. And we want the SABS to work for the benefit of South Africa, and all the challenges that the members have spoken about, they need to be addressed for the country to progress. So, you know, hiding those things and, you know, saying you're making promises and not really trying to walk the talk, we will damage the reputation of the country and the reputation of the organization and the department that is supporting us. So we're going to be honest as well about things that are hindering us from getting to those issues. If those issues are political, we're going to bring them up and say, you know, we're struggling with that, and, you know, I'm grateful that we have a very open relationship with our department and we're able to bring those things forward. So we really are committed to this journey. The issue of poor quality houses, I think for me it talks to that cohesion that is now missing in the country. There's always been an SABS. It might have operated in obscurity and not paid attention to customers, but government departments and other state entities forgot about the SABS, and they went ahead and did their own things outside of this quality assurance mechanism that they have in the country. There was absolutely no need for these houses to be built outside of the quality assurance systems that SABS offers. We're now being asked, now that the houses are falling apart, to go and test the houses. And you're testing in the house, it's already standing, so you can't look at the quality of the cement. It's already mixed with sand and it's on the house. You can't look at the quality of the brick that's been put there. It's already in the house, so you can't take it to the lab and test it and see if it has the right strength. And that is not going to give the assurance for us to look at the houses now. All the material that is going into the, when the government departments do their procurement, they should insist on an SABS mark or some kind of quality assurance. Other companies do that. Eskom does that for their electrical systems. Before they procure the materials, they insist on an SABS mark, and then we're jointly responsible for a product that is failing that has been approved by the SABS. And, so that for me is an appeal that I'm going to put out there to say the capacity within the SABS is there. It might be small flame, but if there is capacity, once there is a long-term interest and commitment to a certain area, we can then, working with our, department, build the appropriate capacity to support that industry where there are problems. And then the tying into that, the role of the SABS and competition, we are the only body in South Africa that is mandated to develop South African national standards. And I guess that was the reason they moved away from being SABS standards to being South African national standards. And it's not moving from the name of the organization. We are SABS. We are servicing our government and our country in the development and maintenance of national standards. So the term SANS is meant to be inclusive. Any company that is doing ISO 9000 or ISO 14000 has to buy a standard either from us or ISO, and we get some royalty from ISO when it's bought from ISO. But everybody has to work against either national standards or international standards. And we are the authority body that works with ISO, and so we are on that track. So the competition is working against the same standards. They either buy the standards from us or they buy from ISO and they then certify against those standards. The China office was set up to address the issues of quality of goods that were coming into the country. But I also think that in the transition, because it was established, I think, 3 months before the former CEO left, and the business case did not quite do a proper due diligence in terms of the governance structures in China. So when the people go to China and they try to settle in and get the papers to, you know, to allow them to operate as a business, they found that they couldn't. And it meant that they had to work in partnership with the partners, with Chinese organizations, and that takes away from the third party and the independent surveillance that you might want to have. So it ended up, because they had to justify in terms of the financials their existence, they ended up doing some work, and there were complaints to the minister that we were facilitating the, instead of stopping, we were facilitating the entry of goods. And we took a decision with the board that because we were unable to establish it fully as was intended, we should close it down. The capacity in the African fellow African countries poses a big challenge for SABS. In that, and it could be seen as a challenge and an opportunity. When we do benchmarks, we are more in line with the other countries that are outside of Africa. India, Brazil, we're talking about the same capacity in terms of the technical committees and the ability to do the full value chain of activities. In the other African countries, the neighboring countries, the capacity is very limited. They're either inside the government department, if they are outside, they have limited capacity, and the engagement, even to develop, we're meeting them on the 21st and we're looking at MOUs with SABS. Because what then tends to happen is that when we have MOUs, they want the business part of the work, and they want SABS to help them to get to the certification. And when they you do the training with them, they're expecting you, because you're the SABS, to give them the resources and the development of those standards bodies. It's a joint effort, I think, between the country itself and the government and the standards body. Then we come to assist in terms of the capacity, but we found that the expectations were really going into the space where they want to make money, and they wanted to use SABS capacity in order for them to make revenue, because they were frustrated that they were not getting enough support from their government. So it becomes a little complicated, and we're still trying to engage with them, and that's why the SADC strategy is delayed, because the expectations from the SABS are that of a poor nation looking at a developed nation, and it causes a little bit of a dynamic that says, you know, you're the big brother and you're going to tell us what to do, and that becomes a little bit of a challenge. But LCB will probably speak more on that. I've addressed the SANS and the SABS. And customs, I think the NLCS will be better a position to address that. So because we don't get involved, they would go and sample, and we stand right at the back ready to test whatever they bring in. And we can't go out and look at, you know, what's coming in the country. We don't have that mandate in terms of the legislation. It has moved to the NLCS, and they will talk to do that. Rightfully, the biggest challenge has been to police the mark, and the strategy of the past was that if we found somebody that was abusing the mark, we'll go and talk to that person and try and get them rightfully involved within the SABS. But you found that, you know, people started to misuse that gentle approach from the SABS, and what we've done as part of this strategy, we've employed a team of legal experts, and in-house we have a head of legal that works strictly on policing the mark. It also damages the reputation of SABS if the mark is associated with low quality goods. It takes the pride from industry away of being associated with this brand if the brand is misused. So it's to the interest of the SABS to police the mark. So we put capacity in place for us to police the mark. And there is a cost to the SABS as a business if the mark is not policed. So it's something that we take seriously, but it is a problem. 2 months ago, I had the pipes industry. We had our meeting, a quarter meeting with them, and they brought pipes that have an SABS mark that come from the same region in Durban. And we then went, sent a team to go look, and we found that the pipes came from India, and they were processes that were not followed. And we're dealing with that issue. The issue of technology, I don't think SABS has a choice but to just keep up with the technology, because if a company, innovative company in South Africa, wants to test, it adds more cost for them to go and test their products in Germany than it will cost them to test it here in South Africa. So the cost to the economy of not having the updated technical infrastructure is bigger than we can imagine. You know, when we do a comparison of investing heavily into the SABS infrastructure and compare that to the individual cost of each company having to send their samples to Germany, you can't compare. But we then look at the case of the SABS and we say, well, we've given them too much money, we can't give them more money to buy equipment. And the reality is that the decay was over 20, 30 years. And the 100 million that we got from our board, for me, it's going to address immediate problems, but it's not going to address the problems of equipment that we need to modernize. But it's a good start. Tested once and accepted everywhere. That's talking, and I do want the member that asked to get to hear the answer, sorry. They tested once and accepted everywhere, the comment that I made. It talks to us having relations with the countries that we're targeting for export, and having the standards body on that side coming to look at our testing facilities and having confidence that once SABS has tested this product, we can say to our stakeholders on the other side, it's good enough. And they are bilateral engagements with each of the standard bodies that one, you know, if we're exporting a product, say food products from South Africa, we want the EU to be comfortable about our pesticides residue testing facilities. And if they have that confidence and they get a report from us every month, we submit a report, you know, then they're happy to get our products and not have to test them again. And it's only when they have that confidence on our laboratory infrastructure that the burden on our industry for products to be tested in foreign countries is lessened. And that's the investment that I'm talking about to the labs. But we know, going the other way, we know we have a challenge with products from a certain geography. And I believe that those products should be tested. All of the products from those, they should be tested to protect our consumers. And if they have the same, if those, the other countries have the same concerns about South Africa, they will have the same stipulation. And it's different strategies for whether you're exporting or importing. Retrenchments, I don't think I got the right reference there on the retrenchments. It wasn't in Richards Bay. We were the best laboratory. We got accolades after accolades from RBCT on our capacity, technical capacity, on our ability to adhere to safety standards. There were accolades after accolades after accolades. What happened there is that a former employee of SABS that was friends with a manager on the other side started 3 years ago lobbying RBCT to remove us. The SABS was in that lab for 25 years before they were removed from that lab. So the equipment was bought by RBCT, so it couldn't have been the failure of the equipment because that was jointly funded by us. And this was the lab that we held in the premium space because it was good for SABS. We got about 30 million rand per year from that laboratory. And after lobbying, then they partnered with a company from France, from the Netherlands. And they then got through a procurement process for RBCT to take the contract from SABS to this foreign company. And they then started recruiting SABS people, and we then had to retrench our staff because of that. And it wasn't the failing of that, it was just because, you know, this is the capacity that can be, you know, moved around. And when it's in private hands, my story is that it is a risk to the country because you then have that capacity diffused, and when people are not making enough money and they decide to go back to their, you know, to close down the offices, we lose that capacity completely as a country. We've done that benchmark, and Bright was the person that did the benchmark, so if he wants to talk more to this, he will, on how the various national bodies are funded, and it varies from one country to another. In other countries, it's fully funded by government, 100% funded by government. In other countries, it's funded like us, partly by government and through revenue. In other countries, it's private. Government, it has a legislation, but government does not put money. And there are conditions for that. And the conditions are that there's no competition. The entity is fully mandated to do the certification, to do the testing, and they're not competing with anybody. India is one example, where all the government departments and all the government entities and all the Indian national standards are certified by the Indian standards institution and not by any other person from outside. And that assures them of revenue that covers the government portion that we have. So, you know, unless we correct the legislation on that part, it's going to be very difficult for the SABS to look at that model of self-funding on standards development without the support in terms of mandating the testing to be done exclusively by SABS where we have the capacity, and exclusively certification by SABS on government entities where government has a voice. And at the moment, it's not the case. You know, there isn't mandated testing, as we're talking about low quality houses. There isn't mandated testing. So it's that support that's needed from government to allow institutions like SABS to go alone without government funding. But there is a variety. There is big confusion today, and you know, it's demonstrated even in the questions for SABS, and we both you know, here with the NRCS, there is confusion about the roles of the two entities. And just talking selfishly from the SABS side, to the detriment of the SABS, because when people have problems with the NRCS, they say it's the SABS. Because we were there first, as the name, when there are failings somewhere in the value chain, it's the SABS is not working. So half the time, we field questions with the media that have nothing to do with the SABS. It's under the new mandate. But we still, you know, as part of the same family, we try and help them, and, you know, our people then we try and facilitate liaison with the NRCS. But it's in terms of the brand of the SABS, it's been damaging in that people wrongfully attach, you know, the what they expect from the NRCS to the SABS, and they go out to the radio and they say, you know, the SABS is a problem. It happened 3 months ago on 702, where they were looking at SMEs, and the issues were regulatory issues, but they went on talking about the SABS that's failing and government institutions not working. And when I engaged directly with the person that was giving the report, it was all regulatory issues, 80% regulatory issues. And so, you know, it's quite a difficult space for us, and obviously we in constant engagement, and I think we have an elegant solution on the levies and SABS mark issue, but it has been difficult for us. And as I've said, internationally it is a trend that the regulator is separated, but how the separation is done and just the how around that is, I think, what needs a little more refinement. Chain stores, again, that's NRCS. We have absolutely no mandate. Even if I see something wrong, I can't go to the person and say, where does this come from? You know, they'll ask me, who are you? Who gives you the mandate? And if they beat me up, I have no protection. You know, so it's again the role of the NRCS, and I will then hand over to the other colleagues to either correct or enhance the answers that I've given to the honourable members.
No. From the where I'm seated, we seemingly answered almost all the questions. You answered eloquently almost all the questions there. I'll request that really, because Honorable Smale, you know, you must adapt to the fact that the chairperson is always right. The first rule of this house, the chairperson is always right. And should everything else fail, you go back to the first rule, the chairperson is always right. So you never go wrong if you do that. I think, Honorable Members, we are having this briefing until 11 o'clock. I request that we manage our time properly so that we can have the other engagement. Now, I think I'm going to the second round of questions, of which I'm worried that no one at CFO is bored here, and then I got worried because she has not fielded any questions. So I'll take this question to her. The critical aspect here is the issue of the SMMEs. I was very happy during your presentation that you dealt with that there was this frustration of the SMEs supposed to go to the head office in Pretoria in order to get that. But what I want to understand is that there's this grant you're getting from DGI for small business technical consulting. What is that grant used for? Are the SMEs expected to pay as all the other businesses? Yeah, on that side. On the second issue will be the issue of the investigations which are there of those employees who paid on fraudulent to that. How far are those investigations? And then the critical aspect is the issue of the asset of the country is these people. What is the vacancy rate? What are you doing to fill it up? Because you cannot have institutions which are running almost half empty or three quarters full when there are people who are in the streets with their degrees and diplomas, whatever. What are you doing to do? And then what the very important people again, the people with disability. I think those are the most precious people in our country. How is this entity dealing with such people? Because a person might be disabled, but he can be a chemist or he can be a physicist, whatever. Are you having some sort of a good policy in adopting these people into the system so that they can also make this valuable contribution to the development of their own country? Honourable members, can I see the hands, please? All right, Honourable Tim Harris, and then the next one is Honourable Smale. Any other question? Any other member? Honourable Tawasa? You don't have to ask if you don't have any questions. I'm closing the line up. 1, 2, 3, go on.
Thanks, Chair. There's a nice picture of the CEO in today's paper. I can pass it around if the members are interested. It's in the business reports, and it's a deal that the SAB struck with Massmart, now famously owned by Walmart. I think it seems like a very good deal because it's going to make it simpler for small businesses to achieve certain minimum standards. I understand the report says it's been worked on for about a year. I have two questions. I'm interested that this was done with Walmart. I mean, we've had big retailers in this country for decades, and why is this now happening with Massmart? Why didn't it happen previously? Where did the initiative come from your side or their side? And then what is the time frame for this being completed? At what point will there be a new framework for small businesses to get much simpler registration standards? Then, Chair, the IPAP 2 document, as you know, is pretty extensive and has very detailed tasks that have to be completed. One of them relates to technical skills plans, and they were meant to be done this year. The draft plans were meant to be done in terms of IPAP 2 by the end of June, and they were meant to be finalized specifically with regards to planning for standards writers by the 30th of September, so 2 weeks ago. I'm interested to find out if we achieved those targets in terms of the IPAP 2. And then lastly, Chair, just two questions that relate to international work. There was an outcry in December last year about the SAPs giving a quality assurance stamp to a Chinese textile mill. And there was a lot of pressure from the media and various players to suggest that there needs to be a change in policy. I'm interested, what happened with that? Was there a change of policy? Did the mill retain their stamp? Is it something that the SAPs is going to continue doing, or are they sensitive to some of the people in this country who think that we shouldn't be giving that kind of accreditation to our competitors? I'll leave it there, Chair.
Yes, Chair. Maybe a few possible questions to the CFO as you related that she's being very quiet today. Chair, I'm quite interested in the whole transfer of assets within the group or to the group, especially to the NSRC and some of the agreements that goes towards that, and that speaks to your notes on point number 9 in your financial statements and partly your that specific point and your loan that you would like to end, which is a further 15 million rand which you would like to cash in, where in the past that you in the previous financial year you managed to pay 800,000 up to the loan. This 15 million rand, is that part of money that is being released by the board, or some of your monies, your capital investments, your profits into dealing with that? And your assets with NRC maximum to some of them 4 years, and some of your accommodations agreements that is free of charge. The maintaining of those assets, does that lie with SABS or will that lie with NRCS? And also your, I see there's possible disbandment of property outside the borders, and I'm seeing in Namibia, and your permission of releasing assets. I just would like to understand, does both the ministers, finance, the finance and DTI, agree to those agreements, or does that lie? Where does the final approval or signature goes? I just would like to understand. I just want to understand if the right channels are being followed in releasing the assets. Thank you.
Chair, I was happy that the CEO mentioned that they like to go out to particularly to the SMEs so that they don't necessarily have to always come to them. But I didn't hear quite clearly what is your marketing strategy so that you are well known out there, so people can approach you as much as you would want to go to them, as well as the public itself, your accessibility, so that people are able to report to you when they suspect some substandard goods that are being sold to.
I think, Honourable Towers, I think that everyone is going to participate now in the delegation. All right, over to you guys.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will break the silence and answer some of the questions, and then I will refer to Brian to have some more in-depth knowledge on certain of the issues. The first thing I would like to address is the fraud. And to answer your question, the investigations are still ongoing. We haven't come to a resolution there. But in the interim, in order to avoid any further cases of fraud, we have undertaken a few initiatives within finance and IT to try and curtail this, and we're investing a lot in systems. You know, one of the main points of access was the access control into our systems, so we're bolstering our systems and our security around those systems. We're also bolstering the supervision in certain areas of finance in terms of putting responsible managers in to monitor that. So as the investigation is ongoing, we are putting in plans to curtail, or we have put in plans in terms of bolstering systems and bolstering the support functions. Then I'd like to talk about the loan. And we had ring-fenced an investment to cover the repayment of that loan. So there's an investment which has been matched up to that loan in terms of value and time, and when that loan is due for repayment at the end of November, we will just cash in on the investment and pay that off. Okay, I'm going to hand over. The last point I want to make on the sale of assets, we do not have sole decision-making ability on the sale of assets. We do refer it to Treasury for approval, Board and Treasury.
The technical consulting grant actually is money that is used by DTI in our space, so DTI can take that question. In terms of the vacancy rate, I think the CEO mentioned what we have been doing in terms of beefing up capacity. As of September, we had 362 vacancies, but because the business has changed to support the new strategy, we have been reviewing what we need, and of the 362, already 83 of them have offer letters issued to candidates. capacity. So there's a huge drive to beef up capacity, which supports the point that the CEO raised. There are another one or three positions that have been identified for scrapping because they don't align with the strategy. But what comes with that is that there's a new creation of new positions to support that strategy, which have already been filled. In terms of disability, and also in our space, is very important. Of our staff complement of just 1,014, 22 are disabled, you know, across all race groups, you know, and gender differences. We still try to get more, and even our facilities, if you visit them, we have made them quite accessible to disabled people. So we really take cognizance of that. In terms of the NLCS split, which you referred to, the split was in the transfer of assets was in three parts, essentially. It was the property in Port Elizabeth that has been transferred to the NLCS. There was a cash payment involved over 2 years, which is the $10 million that you see. The third component of it was the use of the offices in NRCS are still housed in the SADS campus. Part of that agreement meant they were going to enjoy 2 years of rental free accommodation, then 3 years of 50% discount on the rental accommodation. But the asset belongs to SADS. So maintenance, SADS is responsible. I think the other questions are more for the field.
Okay. Starting with the easier one, which is the public awareness for and the marketing strategy. When I joined SAVES, one of the executives joked and said SABS is the best kept secret, and you know, as I got familiar with the organization, I tended to agree with him that South Africa actually doesn't know what asset and know-how they have in the SABS and what we can do to solve some of the challenges that we're facing. And as part of the new strategy, we've established a new marketing department, and you will, before the end of the year, see an advert, an SABS advert. I think the last SABS advert was in the early 90s that went out that spoke about, you know, the SABS, and there is an advert that's being shot at the moment. And in our engagement with industry bodies, we also just trying to get the word out there that we, as an organization, are available to assist. And we're hosting a number of presentations and breakfast sessions for SMMEs around the country. And the first one is part of the convention tomorrow. And we have the Deputy Secretary General of ISO coming in tomorrow morning, and he is going to lead a discussion on standards and SMEs and how we can uniquely, as a standards organization, help solve some of the problems that SMEs are facing. And he will bring international benchmark and which countries have done it better that we can learn from. Then we're going to have another one here in Cape Town in November, and another one is planned for Devon, and we will try and do more of those engagements. But you'll see more of SABS out in the media as we do, we engage in initiatives for SMEs. And the issue of textiles and change of policy, I think it's not up to SABS to say no to a South African company that imports textiles from China. They bring the South African company, they bring the textiles for SABS to test, and we test and we find the textiles. You know, we don't know where they're coming from. So they bring the material, we test the material to its technical, characteristics. strength and all the things in testing, and then they get a mark because the, you know, the factory conditions and all the things that we test for in the mark comply. Now, that the, whether we get products from China or not, it's a policy which, you know, all due respect to the department, it's the department's or government's space to say we're not going to have that kind of relationship with China. We found ourselves in a very awkward space where we expected to discriminate and take away certain products just on the basis of, you know, the industry struggling, and it's not systematic enough. And, you know, we do listen when the department says don't engage with this sector on this issue, but what do we then say to that entrepreneur that is working with that product? On solar water heaters, our solar water heater industry is 95% foreign, Chinese, Israelis, and us, and Europe. And we then have a target that is set by the Department of Energy for certain solar water heaters by this time. You know, do we say no to those products when there is a target that's set for certain solar water heaters as a measurement for energy efficiency? You know, so it's a very interwoven space that, you know, when we really truly play our role of just testing products, we are unable to engage with, because it's for a particular sector that's struggling. A particular sector is not struggling. They want these imports to come in to meet another government mandate. You know, so it puts us in a very difficult position, and we will appreciate help by the department if we should be saying no to certain sectors. You know, we found ourselves in that situation. And then the MassMart issue, it came from the Consumer Protection Act, when the Department of Trade and Industry was discussing the promulgation of the Act. A number of retailers that are getting goods from all over the world started understanding that they have an obligation to ensure that the goods on their shelves meet standards. So they started engaging with us on those bases. But MassMart wanted to use the opportunity to enhance the participation of local SMEs, in that most of them don't quite engage with the standardization effort, as I have indicated. So what happens is that when they try and supply MassMart, they are cut off the process by the fact that they don't meet standards. And that is a missed opportunity for the country, in that our SMEs are not able to get to the value chains of these big retailers because they don't meet standards. So they wanted to have a partnership with FADS where we can work on a standard, and I want to refer honourable members to the highlights page 2 on our annual report, point number 4 that talks to ISO 14005, which is a version of the environmental management system standard ISO 14000, but this is very specific to SMEs. So we're going to be looking at a number of such standards and really looking at what is needed for an SME. Just to make an example, when we do an audit for a SASO, it's very different from an audit that we will do to a company that operates, let's say, in a house with 10 employees, and you're working with SASO with 40,000 employees. And we then charge the SME the same amount of money that we would have charged a SASO, because that's what we have in our system. But the other requirements of the standard do not apply to the SME, because they don't have the complex procurement system, they don't have the complexities of a company like SASO. So in the ISO environment, we have recognized that actually we've developed over time standards that only talk to big corporations, and we haven't worked on standards that take that framework and really put it in the context of the operations of an SME. And we started working on this standard, and internationally we're working on a number of standards, including the ISO 9000 that we spoke about with Grant of Masmat, that SABS has been using. It needs to get to the international level so that our SMEs can then engage in the global value chain. And, you know, in their debate about, you know, the Walmart issue, it is a threat to the South African SMEs that they're going to get left out unless we assist them with the right standards and make sure that they sustainably get in, entrenched in, into the value chains of these companies. Any development will take them out. So really it is to ensure that our SMEs get a slice of the pie sustainably, and they can grow from being small to being medium to being large. It's a 3-year MOU, and you know, Masmat will probably subsidize some of the work that we need to do to assist the SMEs and the local SMEs. And if they want to continue, we will then renew the MOU. And we're talking to the whole of the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa, because they're all under tremendous pressure with the Consumer Commission. And the threat is that when they get frustrated about the heightened regulations on them, is that they're going to totally eliminate SMEs and want to work only with reputable companies that are going to assure them that they will not have legal or litigation issues from consumers on the goods. And that takes out the SME sector out of the value chain completely. Unless we put systems in place to augment support for SMEs, we're going to see a situation out of the unintended consequences of the CPA, is that people are going to avoid working with emerging players because of the threat that if the good is on their shelf, it's their responsibility and they have to answer to the consumer on that good. So it's just support for SMEs to get into that space.
Sure. Can I just say, we hope that is not overly compromising the quality when you say you're going to, that standard you're talking about for the SMEs is not overall going to be not compromising.
And really that's the integrity that we should have as an organization, as SABS. That when we, and that's why we always refer to the international standardization body, where what we do is controlled. So you can have a South African standard. If you're able to elevate it to an international standard and it's adopted, then you've led best practice. There are countries, Mexico, and Britain, they've worked on these standards. They've looked at every standard that affects an SME company, and they've worked on a version that is not lesser of a standard, but is less complex to cater for the context and the environment within which an SME operates. And all the complexities and the layers of business processes that you will audit for an ISO 14000 or ISO 9000 in a large corporation, you don't do that for an SME. So to charge them the same amount of money when actually it takes you 1 hour to audit because of the simple processes is not appropriate. So that's really what it is.
The CEO said that 3-year
MOU, sorry, but I understand at some point there's going to be simplified guidelines
yeah.
that will be published. What, I mean, what's that, when is that happening? When? What is that time frame?
The activity with Masmat, we were always testing their products, but under this MOU, you know, we're starting today. The guidelines SABS has been using, we have a standard that's publicized as a South African standard already in place, so we can test today against that standard because it's a South African national standard. And on the ISO 9000, we finalizing that standard and it's going through the technical committees, and you know, the processes will be in place and the training manuals are in place. I would say in 6 months we will have all the training, the testing that is required, agreed on with Masmat.
Okay.
I think DTI owe us something.
Okay, thank you very much. It's just the question around the technical skills plan, technical infrastructure skills plan. That is a DTI skills plan. It includes skills for standards. It includes skills for accreditation and for metrology as well as for the regulator. The skills plan has been finalized. It is available if somebody wants to see it. And we are now going to see if we can source funding, so that's the next challenge, and then it will be rolled out next year. The SABS has offered to, if we can secure the funding, to actually administer the program. It will be, I think it's about 50 to 60 million rand that we would want to put into that initiative. Thank you.
All right. Honourable members, I think there's one small business technical consulting. Where is that?
Chairperson, this is causing a lot of confusion. This small business technical consultancy fund is not paid over to the SABS. It is a transfer payment that the DTI used to pay the membership of international organizations in the area of technical infrastructure. And we are currently, or we have talked to our financial people to see if we can change the baseline, the name of the of that transfer fee, so that it does not confuse people. Yes, thanks.
All right, all of the members, I think that we've reached a point where we have to rest this presentation. But I think that from the presentation and the questions which were raised by the members, I think that this entity is going to play a very big role in going forward. I think that's what I observed as a policymaker. That is very critical that we have this body, and then this body must be properly supported. Why do I say that? It's simply because you'll have a situation, Honorable Somale, whereby what they raise here is that they have private entities which also test the standard. But the issue is now, who is the final arbiter in the whole process? Because now these goods are in South Africa. These goods have to be exported. So if the SABS is going to test certain goods, and then some private laboratory in my garage is also testing the goods, I might have the skills, I might be a scientist, but I might not have the equipment which is up to standard to match that. So who's the final arbiter? But that question is must be answered by the legislative, by us, the parliamentarians. What is it which we want? Because it cannot be right. You know, it cannot be right. When you look at the, you know, I was studying the there's a certain paper which dealing with the globalization of poverty. You find that it was there's a certain reference to the fact that the national economies are being destroyed, in particular when coming to the national government entities that are made to be redundant so that they depend upon the external sectors, so that in order to produce what is supposed to be local. I think this one, this presentation, when it was made here, it was a classical example of that scenario. You can make an example. They were there when Sosol was developing its advanced chemical industry. But now there's no center where there's coordination of this research so that we've got this top-notch research. So if we want to fight poverty and create employment, really we have to move to the tertiary type of economy. So we need such bodies. Now, what I also appreciated when we opened this meeting is that the frankness of the presenters. Now, they were frank of their shortcomings, and then they were also frank about their challenges. The issue is that what are we going to do as the MPs? Because I think that this entity is very important, that we can allow it to collapse, we can allow it to limp along. Because if we are going to be competitive internationally, one of the issues when we dealt with the trade policy is the issue of the non-tariff barriers. The non-tariff barriers really involve the issue of the standards. The European Union will come that we want the standard. The Americans will come want the standard. So we must ensure that the whatever product is set up to our country must be of impeccable standard. I think that's very critical. That's what we have to do. But at the same time, we must also protect our country from inferior products.
I'm very worried. Actually, the explanation which was made about the closure of the office of China is getting me worried, because China has become our biggest trading partner. And we know very well that, I can make an example of Inyati, this vehicle which is known as, this Kumish is known as Inyati. You can buy it brand new. I'm telling you, within 3 months, the rear view mirrors are falling apart and all those things. But people have spent quite a good lot of money on that. So unless we also monitor, because they have become our trading partner, I'll urge on the side of the portfolio committee that you must put a business case, because China has become our biggest trading partner, that we must have an office there. This office which must be independent, not be in alliance with any Chinese company, so that we really know. Because once those products come into the country, someone from Europe can come and buy those products in South Africa. They say, no, I bought this thing in South Africa. So we are going to end up with the egg on our face at the end of the day. So I think that you are doing a wonderful job there. I think that one must be appreciated. But what is also very important is the relationship with the department, DTI. I see that the relationship is so good, because it's only through proper coordination that we can make a difference. Because this work we're doing needs everyone to put the shoulder on the wheel. It might be the MP, it might be the functionary, the CEO, it might be the director general, but all of us must work in unison so that we really create these 5 million jobs we're dealing with. That's why we find it funny in this committee that almost we're all different political parties, but we're seeing from the same hymn book, because we put the country first more than any other thing. But we are really appreciative of your report, and I think that those issues you have raised, we are still going to digest them. And then as we make our report, we are going to capture our position on what we want to do. Thanks a lot for the job well done, in particular in taking care of our money properly. Sure. All right.
We can go for
a break now for a 10-minute break and come back so that we can take the other presentation.
Yeah, what I understand from Monday to Tuesday, what is it? No, it's too long. Now other people allow or give approval for you to write it also. You follow what happened now. It's like you do something good,
yeah.
He shows that he's capable.
Yeah,
he can meet with the best.
Yeah.
No, I like it, but I like it in the
I mean, I'm trying to say why do we